This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 419. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
More heroes join the quest. Babs has quite a bite. Thank Gaia for Wonder Woman. Now you do the backstory. And industry news. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, September 4th, 2016. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9-SFP. Future Quest number 4 by Parker, Shaner, Randall, and Hi-Fi. So the series continues to pull in the various Hanna-Barbera action characters because we begin with Mighty Mitor. Think prehistoric He-Man. In this case, it's a more mature hero, and he's also fighting those vortex monsters. Cut to high above Florida in the Quest jet, where Jan is trying to remember who she is. And at one point, they show her a music video to, quote, coax something out, which is just an excuse to show a music video of The Impossibles. Uh-oh, turbulence. Yet another vortex. There's two adults and a kid nearby. The kid falls into the vortex and enters the Lost Valley. Yep, he becomes Dino Boy. Blip manages to get Jan to remember who she is, just as Dino Boy, Ugg, and a dinosaur appear. Cut to Dr. Zinn and Jace. The former has realized that the vortices are too powerful to control, giving him an excuse to bring up Jade's file. So that's a lot to pack into the main story here.
So do you think it's staying pretty true to the Hanna-Barbera characters, or...
I think very clear. I mean, there's a few adjustments, especially in the backup story, but it all makes it fit better. The problem is the effort to keep introducing characters means the storyline doesn't really move forward very far.
And you're going to end up with so many characters that are you going to be able to have a plot line?
Right. Because in that backup story, Zinn brings up another file, and this time it's the Conroy family, Mom, Dad, and Buzz, who used to work with the Quests, plural, and Zinn, on the Zarathustra project. Mrs. Quest and Mr. Conroy were conveniently killed in a sabotaged experiment.
We always wondered where Mrs. Quest was.
Right. And so Mom Conroy decides her kid needs protection, so she creates Frankenstein Jr., think giant robot controlled by a kid, a.k.a. Johnny Sacco and his flying robot. The only change they made here is, in the cartoon, it was the dad who had created the robot. And they kind of introduced the mom who did it and also made her an Asian character. I think they're running out of new characters to add at this point, other than maybe Shazam or Moby Dick, which is this ridiculous cartoon about a friendly whale and two kids who fight crime. But the problem is they need to start moving the story along. DC Comics Bombshells Annual number 1 by Bennett Chartier and Hi-Fi.
Who's really getting around, apparently.
He does a lot of lettering work. DC annuals tend to be hit or miss because the writer wants to tie them into the main story, but has to assume some readers won't buy that issue, so it can't tie it too close to the main story. This introduces multiple characters who are set up as an intriguing new team who we may or may not ever see again. And we begin in the Bayou and the Belrive Mansion, in this case. We meet a version of Killer Croc and a vampiric Batgirl?
Mm-hmm.
Cut to Amanda Waller and a new Army cadet, Francine Charles, who in the main continuity is Bab's roommate in the Batgirl title.
Oh, okay. I was wondering who she was.
Yeah. She's called up to retrieve Batgirl, and we get a long sequence in the form of a song where Barbara Gordon is a French girl in World War I who ends up as a flyer saving a German pilot. They fall in love. He dies in combat. She'll do anything to bring him back, including going to the bayou and getting involved in magic.
Now, see, I thought they were going to pull in, like, Swamp Thing or something.
Yeah, that would be a perfect opportunity. She apparently sacrifices her humanity because it's not explained well in order to save him. Somehow she becomes a vampire. This happens off screen, kind of.
Exactly.
Winding up in a coven with versions of Ravager and Enchantress, so that's the coven, Francine arrives but is dropped into a dungeon along with Killer Croc. She figures out how to escape and after a battle shows Babs that Luke,
her pilot lover,
right, is still alive. They then all agree to return to Bombshell HQ and become a covert team, the Suicide Squad. Kind of like this idea, and I really do hope they take this somewhere and don't just drop this off, which happens more often than not in these annuals.
Mm-hmm. Well, they might show up like in a bit part in the main title rather than actually having their own story.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see their own story. The Legend of Wonder Woman number 9 by DeLiz and Dillon. Most of this final issue involves Diana learning who her true benefactor is because she goes on an astral journey with Gaia, who powered Hippolyta's clay to become alive as Diana. Gaia tells her she can get her powers back if she gives up her mortal life as Diana Prince. But she realizes she really has no choice and does so. We also learn about the Titans of Myth. They are actually the Manhunters from Green Lantern, which I thought was like, wow, there's a curve there. Diana dukes it out and stops the Titan. Back to another astral journey, meeting Alcippe again, who gives her a pep talk, and then she wakes up. Diana now has to leave her friends, although Etta tracks her down later and says, have you ever heard of Gateway City? And Gateway City is the city that she eventually ends up in, actually more like Silver Age. I'm going to assume we're going to see a second volume of this excellent title. At least I hope so. Harley Quinn and Her Gang of Harleys number 5 of 6 by Thierry Palmiotti, Morrisant, McTeague, and the ever-present Hi-Fi. I'm not going to go into the plot line in detail. Suffice it to say, the gang fights off bad guys. They reunite with Harley. Harley goes off to fight Harley Sin. The main point of the story, however, is to provide Sin's backstory. She's the rich kid of a Trump-like dad who uses his wealth to cover up Sin's crimes instead of actually being a parent.
So do we think this is Tiffany Trump? No, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Sin goes from bad to worse over time, becoming Harley's stalker, and then fails to join the gang. So she decides she has to take out the competition. What I don't understand here is, why wait until the next to last issue to provide any of this info? Sin seemed like a random lunatic with no real motivation, which made her a not very interesting character. I would have brought this in piece by piece throughout the miniseries, kind of building a story or a backstory for this character. But that's not how they went. Well, I do have some industry news. Rebirth is now officially bigger than the New 52. It sold 12 million comics this summer. 11 issues sold over 200,000 copies. 60 plus titles sold over 100,000 copies. And DCU Rebirth just went back for a fifth printing.
So how do you feel about this? Do you feel that Rebirth is better than the New 52?
I think overall it is. There's still some real issues with it, but I think they've tried to fix some of the major issues that occurred in New 52, as often happens in these half reboots where they say, well, the last main reboot, we did this right, but that didn't go right. You know, like the way they went with Superman, so they killed him off and brought back Earth August pre-Flashpoint Superman. DC and Dynamite are going to present Wonder Woman 77 meets the Bionic Woman, which makes sense because they're both government agents, just different shadowy government organizations. We're getting a JLA Suicide Squad crossover event with which will be a weekly miniseries in December and January, which seems like a strange time of the year to do an event like this, which kind of indicates to me that they don't have a lot of confidence in this, because otherwise this would be the big summer event.
Well, and also it would have come out closer to one or other of the movies, wouldn't it?
One would assume. I'm not sure if I'm going to go for this or not, because this just has synergy written all over it and not necessarily a good story.
Yes.
Just corporate synergy. So the Cincinnati Comic Expo has taken a stand over Artist Alley. You actually have to be a creator now. And this has become an issue because an Artist Alley table is much cheaper than a booth on the main area generally.
Right.
And so a lot of people are saying, well, I'm kind of like a creator. So
yeah, I make things.
Right. And so why can't I just go out there? And we're also seeing a lot of cases where artists are doing all this copyrighted work, or in some cases, even just slightly altering existing artwork with like a computer and saying, oh, that's my artwork now.
Right. So really, it's more like a business who's claiming to be an artist who sells basically manufactured goods rather than artists promoting themselves.
Exactly. Now, there was a memo sent to those who signed up for their Artist Alley. We want to remind you that you signed up for a table in Creator Alley at the Expo. Creator Alley is specifically for artists and creators of original artwork or craft work to sell to patrons of the Expo. That is why it is a Creator Alley. It is for those who have created original artwork and pieces to sell, display, and exhibit. Our registration states, a list of items that may not be sold or raffled or otherwise at Creator Alley tables. Comic books or prints that the artist has not contributed to. So if your name is not listed in the credits, you may not sell it. Commercially available toys, collectible vintage toys, original art that is not produced by the artist at the table. You may not utilize a Creator's Alley table to sell your collection of convention sketches.
Fair, yes.
Yeah. Any other item which has not been handmade, created, or forged by the artist at the table. Artists and exhibitors in booth spaces. If you are selling art prints which you do not have the permission to sell or are using a computer program to manipulate the original art, you will be asked to leave the expo immediately with all forfeiture of space and passes. You will also be banned from participating at all future expo events. We started these policies as a registration form a couple of years ago, but are determined to make sure that all our fans and exhibitors are aware. So this has been a creeping problem. And I think it's mostly caused by the fact that booth prices have gone up.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to make more money and people are trying to find a way around it. And that's kind of distorted what the Artist Alley was supposed to be.
So maybe it's time to get rid of Artist Alley.
Or maybe there's a way to make Artist Alley more fair. This may be the way to do it. We'll see if they actually enforce this. That's really the question.
Yeah. Or maybe what they need to do is to have different levels of booths. If you're a business that does this much, you're in this area and it's this much.
Instead of just square footage, which is how it works today, basically.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get out of here, it's time to prepare America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Are you ready, Mark?
I'm ready.
Okay, I'm pushing the button.
TV related?
Yes.
Is it one person on the cover?
Yes.
Man?
No.
Woman?
Yes.
And is this person on an existing TV show?
Yes.
On one of the broadcast networks?
Yes.
On ABC?
No.
CBS?
No.
NBC?
No.
Fox?
Yes.
Okay, so it's a woman, and she's like the star of the show?
One of the stars of the show.
One of the stars of the show on Fox. Is it a genre-related show?
No.
So, is it a comedy?
No.
Is it a drama?
Yes.
It's a drama on Fox. Okay. And it's an existing show.
Yes.
Is it a procedural?
No.
Is it medical?
No.
Is it based in current day?
I believe so.
And it's a drama. Hmm.
I'll give you another clue.
Yeah.
We have not watched it.
Okay. I'm trying to think of existing shows on Fox that were... So she's like the co-star?
Yes.
And so the other star is a man?
Well, there are maybe more than one co-star. It's an ensemble show.
It's an ensemble show that... And it's not...
That is very popular, but we have not watched it.
And it's not a procedural.
Do you want another clue?
Sure.
It's based in the music world.
So it's somebody from Empire.
It is.
Taraji P. Henson.
It is.
Ah.
That was too big a clue.
Yeah, that was too big a clue.
That just gave it away.
Yeah.
Would you have gotten it without
that? I don't think I would have. I don't think I'd ever gotten around to that. I'm like, oh yeah, Empire.
Yes. Okay.
All right. Want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn. You can call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.